Find more State House coverage at sdpb.org.
Welcome to the Senate Commerce Committee hearings for today, Thursday, February 26th. February 20th, that's the wrong date on there, but excuse me. The Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Adelstein.
Here.
Camp.
Here.
Merchant here. Nesselhoff. Quebec Berry. Nelson. Olson.
Here. We have a quorum present, and we're hereby called to order. Look for approval of the minutes. There's been a motion by Senator Gant, a second by Senator Merchant to approve the minutes from the last committee meeting. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. We're going to start off with House Bill 1060. The chair is going to defer House Bill 1212 until Thursday. We'll then go to House Bill 1219, 1265. Will be the last bill heard today, and we'll actually do 1268 third. So 1060, 1219, 1268, and then 1265, and we're deferring 1212. With that said, proponents for House Bill 1060, please come forward and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
Members of the committee, Brett Afdahl with the Division of Banking.
Is that on, Brett? Maybe pull a little closer.
Is that better? I don't see an on switch. Is that better?
Yep, there you have it. Thank you.
Brett Afdahl, counsel for the Division of Banking, here to speak to House Bill 1060. And I do have a handout for the committee, if I could have that passed out, please.
You could, help him with the handout, please.
House Bill 1060 originates indirectly out of some federal legislation that was passed by Congress and signed by the President on July 31st of 2008. It mandates the licensure or registration of all residential mortgage loan originators. Bank employees are registered under a system administered by the federal regulators, and non-bank employees will be licensed at the state level. It also mandates the use of a nationwide mortgage licensing system that was developed by the states to keep track of all the folks that do this kind of business, their continuing education and background check results. Thank you. Just to speak to the handout, just so the committee knows who we're talking about, we have mortgage lenders, mortgage brokers, and mortgage loan originators. And looking at the chart, you can see a sharp decline in the number of licensees we've had. They peaked in 2006 and dropped by a lot in 2007. On the far right of the graph, there's a gray bar. Those are the mortgage loan originators. And that's a bigger number because they were not previously registered. There was legislation in this area in 2007. But just to give you some context, that number is 526 that are currently registered through the division. We thought that number would be in the thousands, but there's been a lot of contraction in this area. The SAFE Act put into place some minimum licensing standards, and states are all required to implement those. They include fingerprint-based background checks. We already do the background checks, but it put in place some felony prohibitions. There'll be credit checks, pre-license education and testing, some continuing education requirements, which we already have in place, but we'll need to modify slightly, and it'll change the bonding requirement from a flat amount to kind of a sliding scale that will, quote-unquote, reflect the amount of loans originated. That will be some kind of a ratio in my mind. That will be something be established in rule. The states got together after the SAFE Act was passed to develop, I don't know if uniform is the right word, but a kind of a common set of laws that would meet the SAFE Act requirements, but would bring some uniformity across the states, because that was, I think, one of the intents of the SAFE Act. Underlying all this, the HUD is the backup authority under this. They're required to review each state's compliance with the SAFE Act. If they find a state out of compliance with the SAFE Act minimum licensing requirements, they are then required to either give that state more time to get into compliance or to take over regulation in that state, preempting their regulation of what is basically a state enterprise. HUD has reviewed the model state law developed by the states and has approved it. We've incorporated only the parts we need to in our act. We did a lot of this work back in 2007. And I just want to speak briefly to what happened on the House side. You can see that this bill is hog-housed. That was by our own doing. There were some cleanup amendments done. There was an exemption inserted for nonprofit lenders, and also a delayed implementation date for our current licensees to meet the new standards and for people that are not currently licensed that will need to be. So just to clean up the bill, we did a hoghouse amendment on that. Our current law requires licensure of all commercial lenders as well as residential, so that's one area that we, I guess in essence, go beyond what the SAFE Act requires, but we did that 2 years ago. We're one of only a handful of states that requires the licensure and regulation of this type of commercial lending. But from our perspective, the risks are the same, whether you're lending to somebody on the house or you're lending somebody on a small business or on a large business for that matter. Our industry supports the bill. They did testify it for it on the house side. Craig Marquardt is not able to be here today. But we just believe this will provide more consumer protection in the state. It'll make things more efficient. Instead of one licensee having to undergo a background check in however many states is operating, say 20, they'll go through that process one time. That information will be submitted into the nationwide system, and then any state that he applies for a license in will be able to have access to that information. Several issues have come up as we've moved our way through this process. The most recent one is we ran into a snag with some insurance companies. If you look in Section 12 of the bill, there is a substantive change to repeal an exemption that is currently provided for insurance companies doing this kind of lending. Right now, other than otherwise regulated institutions like banks, insurance companies are the only commercial lenders that are not currently within our regulatory scheme. And it's created an unlevel playing field that we found out that these insurance companies, we're talking about the large ones from out of state like New York Life. There's a whole list of them. But they don't have any regulatory overhead in the state. They don't have a license. They don't have a presence in the state. And we found out through numerous discussions that they're also not paying the bank franchise tax on this type of lending activity in the state. So from our perspective, it creates an unregulated lending activity in the state, and it also creates a disparity between our banks and mortgage lenders that are operating in the state, employing South Dakotans doing this type of lending in the state. It's hard for those type of institutions, I think, to compete on this kind of unlevel playing field. We tried to work something out with the insurance companies to kind of have a trade-off, because their initial argument was that this would create undue regulatory burden. So we tried to pare back that burden on the insurance companies. But it quickly became evident that the real issue is the bank franchise tax. I think their argument is that they pay the premium tax on a gross receipts level for all their insurance products they write, and that they shouldn't pay any other tax. But from what all that we can see, that the lending activity is not taxed under that gross receipts premium tax. So I believe somebody will be here to testify on that particular issue, and I will stand by for questions. I appreciate your favorable consideration of the bill.
Thank you, sir. Additional proponents for House Bill 1060.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Jeremiah D. Murphy. I'm a registered lobbyist for Citibank, South Dakota. And we have about 30 mortgage originators in South Dakota, and they have not previously been regulated under the system, and they would come under the new system of regulation. And we ask that the effective date of this act be deferred, and the department graciously agreed to that. The principal reason for that is this is brand new, and it's just a matter of it's in gestation. And I think there's a lot of questions, and HUD is going to direct the final product, and they're changing directions as we go. And since the act isn't effective until a year from now, that gives us an opportunity to come back a year from now and react to anything that is a problem. The bond is a challenge because the bond says that it reflects the total amount of business we do, and we haven't seen rules on that or suggestions, at least from HUD or the state. State's always been reasonable in these kind of things, but we need to know what HUD's going to do, and that's something we may want to come back with. But we want to be under the system. We think this is a good act. We think that we compliment the division for what they've done, and we support what they've done, and we appreciate the fact that they listened to us with our amendment. I'd be glad to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Additional proponents for House Bill 1060. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Julie Johnson. I represent Absolutely Aberdeen, which is a growth initiative in northeast South Dakota. Also, Prairie Vision is our regional development arm. In my role with Prairie Vision, we do get the good fortune of working with the smaller community development organizations throughout our region on a weekly basis. I would direct your attention to what I believe is currently Section 24 in the bill before you today. I would limit my testimony to Section 24 and thank the division for working with us. Senator Nelson's looking for Section 24. Do I have the wrong one?
Missing that page.
Missing that page. Oh. Section 24 specifically now would exempt the small nonprofit development groups from the Act.
Everyone is missing that section from our bill insert. Can you just stand by for a second, Ms. Jensen? We'll stand at ease until we get copies from the page.
I'll stick to 24.
I think everybody has their computers, Julie, so we'll just go ahead and allow you to continue. It looks like a fairly simple section that you're going to address, so we'll continue, and if somebody needs a hard copy, we'll get that to them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Julie Johnson, I get the good fortune of working with our regional development partners throughout our region on a fairly regular basis. And it is with their intentions that we rise in support of current Section 24 and ask that no matter what else happens to this bill, that Section 24 remain intact. What it would do is to exempt the small nonprofits from the requirements of the Act. I think after reading the law, the federal law on this subject, it became clear that they really didn't intend to regulate the small nonprofits, which include everything from Habitat to Humanity to a local development corporation and a lot of things in between, mostly all volunteers at most levels. So it became clear that the federal law really didn't intend to sweep them all in. Over the years, there's been some language that would exempt them from certain requirements, such as continuing ed and surety bond and those kinds of things. And I think even if all of them were in the room today, they would say those are even a bit onerous for an all-volunteer organization for most of these groups. So with that, we do have a real live developer in the Senate. He's right behind me. I'll defer to his testimony, but we would encourage keeping Senate Section 24 intact, if you can, please, and would support the bill in that form and thank the division for working with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Additional proponents for House Bill 1060. Looks like a good reason for the criminal background checks.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Senator Brown. Welcome.
My name is Senator Brown. I represent District 23. However, this morning I come to you in my capacity as the Executive Director for the Gettysburg-Whitlock Bay Development Corporation. One of the main reasons that I was hoping to come on record this morning is I would like to express my sincere admiration for the department and their willingness to work with us on making Section 24 workable for our small development corporations. They have done a tremendous job of listening to our concerns and helping to draft a response that I believe is in the best interest for South Dakota and for our small development corporations. As Ms. Johnson had testified, some of the provisions of this act would basically shut down most of our small development corporations in small communities. The provisions that would be required are simply too onerous, and given the level that we deal with mortgages is really pretty small. And whenever we would do that, we would normally hire the assistance of an attorney to accomplish that. So there are certainly safeguards in place there. And like Ms. Johnson, with Section 24 intact as it is right now, we would be very much in favor of seeing a favorable outcome for this particular bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Additional proponents for House Bill 1060? Additional proponents, House Bill 1060. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kurt Everson. I appear here this morning as the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Bankers Association. I just want to go on record letting the committee understand that the members of my association have long supported more regulation for the people who are originating mortgage loans. We are supportive of House Bill 1060. We believe that companies in this business need to be known to a regulatory authority and subject to that authority. We also believe when the discussion came up, Mr. Aftal mentioned that there's been discussion about who is paying and who is not paying the bank franchise tax. We clearly are in supportive of leveling that playing field, and if there are indeed insurance companies that are unlicensed, unregulated, and not subject to the tax, we believe that that's a legitimate public policy issue for the legislature to deal with. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Additional proponents for House Bill 1060. Additional proponents? Seeing none, any opponents to House Bill 1060? Opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Gregerson, and I'm a registered lobbyist for American Council of Life Insurance, which is a trade group for the major insurance companies. I think this is not an easy issue. It's somewhat complex, and I would like to spend just a little bit of time with you, giving you some background so that you can make an informed decision on this issue. If we go back in time, in 1987, this legislature licensed the mortgage lender business. And any person who engaged in the business of mortgage broker and so forth was required to obtain a license to engage in that business. There were seven entities that were exempt from the licensing requirement, and that included banks and insurance companies. And those institutions which were licensed under this act are subject to an annual income tax imposed by Chapter 1043, or that's the financial institutional tax. Again, that does not include insurance companies. Now, insurance companies are subject to a tax levied on premiums and the consideration they get for annuities. That's Chapter 1044. So each company, each insurance company doing business in South Dakota is required to pay the tax imposed under 1044, and the statute also says that if a company is subject to the tax under 1044, they are exempt from all other taxes in the state except property taxes, personal sales tax, and use tax. Now, the bill that you're looking at today, House Bill 1060, is really what it boils down to. I think it originally was an attempt to comply with the Federal Act. It seeks to amend the current law in South Dakota, the mortgage lender business, by incorporating many of the provisions of the Federal Safe Mortgage Licensing Act and the corresponding model state law to assist with the recovery and the revitalization of America's residential housing market. Now, this bill is unique because it applies to the commercial market. The Federal Act does not require that. It only requires those parties making residential loans to be subject to the Act. Insurance companies don't make residential loans. This would require that all insurance companies who make commercial loans, they have to be licensed, registered, and maintain a unique identifier through the Nationwide Mortgage Licensing System Registry. Now, the interesting part, the federal government has not set up any device or rules or anything for registering commercial loans. It only applies to residential loans. And it's quite, but it's quite cumbersome as far as complying with the National Registry if we were required to do so, but we're not. Now, it's interesting. The banks are not included in this bill. I know Mr. Murphy said he commends the Division of Banking for bringing forth this, but they are not covered. So what the bottom line is that what we're going to do is we're going to require that commercial loans made by insurance companies in South Dakota will come under this act, and that's just about it. And so I think what we're having here is more of a competitive fight between the banks and the insurance companies as to the tax issue and what is fair and what is not fair. The commercial loan activity of life insurers is already subject to regulation by the Division of Insurance. And what this will be is now the insurance companies will be subject to not only the Division of Insurance, but the Division of Banking. Their insurers are subject to investment law limitations, and all insurers must provide a comprehensive list of their lending activities as part of their annual statement and filings with the Division of Insurance. I emphasize no other state requires life insurers to be separately licensed and regulated by state banking regulators in connection with their commercial lending activities. We would be the sole state. And if the state banking director wants to be informed about insurer lending activity in the state, this information is readily available from the Division of Insurance. And I'd like to, when this bill first came up, and I talked to the banking director, they were mainly interested in information. But I don't know if they realized what the insurance companies have to file with the Division of Insurance. But every year they have to file a mortgage showing all mortgage loans that current year. And the mortgage loan shows who it's to, it shows the date acquired, the rate of interest, the book value of the recorded investments, the increase or decrease by adjustments, the value of the land and buildings, and the date of last appraisal. And there's also all this information is available. And I don't know if the state of South Dakota, I didn't know we had a desire to double up on regulations. That doesn't seem to be very economic. But in any event, that information is available. Concern's been expressed that insurers are making commercial loans in the state but aren't paying the 6% bank franchise tax. And this, therefore, creates a competitive advantage to insurance companies. First, it should be noted that banks and insurers are in a different business. Banks sell credit. Insurers sell protection against risk. Banks and insurance companies make commercial loans for different reasons, and they do different things with the money they earn from the loans. For an insurer, gains from commercial lending are used to allow the insurer to pay claims. Banks do not have this obligation. In addition, the reason insurers do not pay the bank franchise tax or any bank tax in any other state is because insurers are already subject to the state's gross premium tax. Unlike the corporate income tax, state gross premium taxes must be paid regardless of an insurer's profitability. They pay that whether they're making money or not. Unlike the corporate income tax, there are no deductions from the premium tax for losses, expenses, or overhead. The gross premium tax is such a heavy burden that 38 states, including South Dakota, have premium tax laws that specifically exempt insurers from other state corporate taxes. And we have that statute in South Dakota. In the remaining states, insurers are either exempted in the income tax statutes themselves, or in a small minority of states, insurers are subject to both taxes, but the premium tax is credited against the income tax to prevent double taxation. South Dakota would be the only state to tax insurers on their commercial lending activity. This would be bad news for South Dakota borrowers. Subjecting insurers to the expense of dual regulation and dual taxation for their commercial lending activity is bad for borrowers. The increased cost will necessarily have to be passed on to those people in South Dakota that want to make a commercial loan. During the course of our negotiations with the banking, trying to come to a conclusion, we agreed that we would provide further information if they didn't think that what the Division of Insurance has is sufficient. We have no objection to that. Our main objection was be subject to the National Registry because we'd be the only state that requires commercial loans to come under the National Registry. So they made an offer to us that they would relieve us of that, providing that information. However, that in return was we had to agree to pay the bank franchise tax on our commercial lending activities, and which that price was too high, so we couldn't go along with that compromise. So we have an amendment. Jackie has an amendment that we would like to propose, that it restores the exemption we have under the Licensing Act to the exemption that insurance companies and banks have from this particular statute. But again, I want to emphasize that in the bottom line, it looks like to me the only thing this act does is it puts commercial loans by insurance companies and not banks under the under the Federal Registry, and I want to make clear that the federal law, which they said originally was the reason for this particular bill, the federal law does not require this overseeing of commercial loans. And for that reason, we would ask Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that our amendment be adopted. It would solve our problems anyway. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there additional opponents to House Bill 1060?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Darla Pullman Rogers, and I've got some of the stuff that's going around here, so I apologize if my voice breaks here. I represent and am registered lobbyist for NAFA of South Dakota, which is the National Association of Insurers and Financial Advisors. And our agents who sell life insurance in South Dakota rise in support of the company's objection to the provisions of this bill that would subject them to regulation by the Division of Banking. And as you can see from the amendment, if you look at the bill, the section that we are objecting to is Section 10 of the bill, which is on Section 12, page 10, and specifically subsection 7. That's the section that removes our current the company's current exemption under current law. I think that I would like to maybe take a little higher level picture of this if we could. When an agency is increasing its regulatory authority, which is what is happening here, I think that as a legislature, you have to look at what is the justification for doing that. In this particular case, I would suggest that maybe we haven't really heard any real justification for doing that. There hasn't been any testimony or any instances of abuses that have occurred by insurers that have made commercial loans in the state of South Dakota. There hasn't been any testimony that the Division of Banking has had complaints filed with them because of this type of commercial loan activity. It appears to be that they're spreading their regulatory net over insurance companies because basically they can. And I don't know that I believe, and maybe I guess I don't believe, but I would submit to you that maybe that is not sufficient justification. So then you have to ask yourself, what are the consequences of doing that? And in particular, maybe to the consumers in South Dakota. Well, first of all, as Mr. Gregerson pointed out, you are subjecting insurance companies to dual regulation, and there is no disputing that. This is already a very heavily regulated industry, and so to submit them to further regulation would have a chilling effect on their desire to do business in the state of South Dakota. Secondly, it appears that you would also be subjecting them to dual taxation. And again, I think that the bottom line result of that is that you're going to have a chilling, it's going to have a chilling effect on insurance companies wanting to do commercial loans in the state of South Dakota. If you would put yourself in the position of that insurance company and you have capital that you want to invest, so you go to, you look at the states, you look at the regulatory environment that exists out there, and you look at South Dakota, and now we become the only state that's going to impose double regulation and double taxation. The decision is pretty simple, and that would be, as a company, we are not going to invest our capital in the state of South Dakota. So for those reasons, we would really urge you to adopt the amendment that Mr. Gregerson has passed out. We believe that creating a costly environment in which to do business in South Dakota is bound to have an effect on our consumers. It's bound to have an effect on whether insurers view South Dakota as a desirable place to do commercial lending. So we would urge you to adopt the amendment and leave insurance companies to the regulation of the Division of Insurance. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional opponents to House Bill 1060. Any additional opponents to House Bill 1060? Seeing none, Mr. Aft, I'll rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brett Aftel with the Division of Banking. I'll try to be brief, but the two opponents covered a lot of ground. I guess first I'll address the amendment. I believe that would put us back to where we are. If this committee so chooses to adopt that amendment, I think there'd have to be one change to it. It would have to limit the exemption to non-residential mortgage lending. Under the SAFE Act, they cannot be exempt from regulation if they're doing residential lending. And it, from talking to some of the companies last week, it seems that some are involved in that activity. Regarding Chapter 5414, which is the regulation of this area. It was put in place in 1987, but if you look back at the legislative history, an exemption for insurance companies was not provided at that time. That was done through an amendment in 2002. And I think the significant change since that time is that in 2007, we included, or we broadened the chapter to regulate commercial and agriculture type lending. It's not just residential lending. So I think that was a significant change made after that law was put in place. Regarding the in lieu of provision, I think you have to, I'll provide an example. There are bank holding companies out there that have on one side an insurance subsidiary and on the other side a subsidiary bank. They're doing two completely different lines of business, and they're both subject to a different form of tax. The insurance company pays the same premium receipts tax, and the bank pays the bank franchise tax. Now we're talking about insurance companies. They're structured in a similar fashion. They typically have a holding company. AIG jumps to mind. They have one holding company. They have over 200 insurance companies under that holding company. I'm not sure how many different lending arms they have, but they're almost always set up in different entities for various reasons, tax and liability. So in that example, you would have the insurance subsidiary paying the premium receipts tax, but the lending arm not paying the bank franchise tax. So I don't follow the argument that that would be double taxation on the same thing. The income tax would not be touching the premium amounts that are taxed under the premium receipts tax. They're two completely separate issues. So currently right now, insurance companies would be the only commercial lenders not subject to tax. That's the way it's set up. And the NMLS, the National Mortgage Licensing System, while it was not designed to register commercial lenders, it can handle it. There are other states that are licensing money lenders on that system. So if it can handle that kind of thing, that is far, far more different than a commercial lender is from a residential real estate lender. Those two are very similar. The bank employees will be registered, but that'll be done through their federal regulator. That's why they're exempt from this act. They're already regulated. They're regulated by us and the FDIC or the Federal Reserve. So they're regulated. They're already regulated by two of us. And contrary to the opponent's testimony, this lending activity by insurance companies is not regulated. They do submit information to the Division of Insurance. We're not saying that that's not the case. But submitting information is far different than being regulated and examined on those lending activities. I mean, under that argument, I'm regulated by the IRS, but really all I do is submit a return every year. But until they send me a letter and say, we're going to do an audit of you and show up at my door, I think that's when the actual regulation begins. As to why we would enter into the regulation in this area, if you look at the SAFE Act, it is completely reactionary. There was a meltdown in the residential mortgage market across the country. Most of that stuff did not happen in South Dakota. I'm not saying we're immune, but that is completely reactionary. That process is already wound down. The wrongdoing was already done, and the SAFE Act is not going to undo that. We have run this question by our the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, asking why no one regulates this area, and the response we got is, well, it hasn't melted down yet. And that just is a striking response. That I think that this area will change within the next year. There's some pretty big cracks in that market. So we're trying to be proactive in this area. It is not going to be dual regulation. They submit information to the Division of Insurance, but they're not subject to examination on that lending activity. So with that, I will stand by.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Nesloff.
I'd have a question for anyone who can answer it. And perhaps this, we covered a lot of territories, perhaps this was mentioned. Does this fall in line with the majority of other states, the way they regulate these loans? Or can anybody answer that for me?
Mr. Chairman, Brett Affle. No, I will field that. Currently, we're one of a handful of states that regulates the commercial real estate lending. I believe North Dakota does. There are a few other states that do. I'm not aware of another state that regulates lending by insurance companies. I think they have a pretty good deal going, and I think they have it going in every state.
Senator Nesloff.
So when Darla was talking about how this might be unattractive to companies to come in and do this, I mean, that's a very valid point if we're the only state that's going to be regulating this in this way.
Mr. Chairman? I think it's valid to a certain point, but I think it goes back to the competitive imbalance. If the field is leveled, we have a lot of big banks that operate in this state. I mean, one of the arguments is made that these are big loans and then our banks can't handle it. But we have Wells Fargo, U.S. Bank, you know, First National Bank, Dakota Bank, Great Western Bank. We have a lot of big banks that can make these kind of loans, and if they're on an equal footing with these companies that just parachute in and pluck off one loan here and there with no overhead, I think if it's a good loan, it'll be made.
Additional questions from the committee? Senator Alston.
I'd like to question Mr. Gregerson.
Mr. Gregerson, if you could just repeat your name for the record, please.
Dick Gregerson, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gregerson, I'm trying to get a clear picture of what you see as a difference. In other words, of the double taxation. If you pay a premium tax, that's one issue. If you do a different kind of business that otherwise is subject to a tax, wouldn't this be entirely separate? In other words, the premium is paid based on an actuarial table based on the risk. The mortgage is made as a profit-making, separate operation and determined, once again, by risk and interest rate. Why are these not totally separate sources of income?
Mr. Chairman? Senator Edelstein, the banks or the insurance companies, when they take in premiums, they pay a tax. They have to invest that money. They have to make money. Now, whether it's in equities or bonds or loans, but that money they make is used to pay claims, death claims. And you're going to take away now one of the few areas that the insurance companies are making money on commercial loans, so they can stay solvent and pay off claims. What you're saying is that some investments will not be subject to tax, other investments will. And so what is that going to do to the bank's willingness to make commercial loans? There's a lot of ag loans being made in South Dakota and commercial loans. And this is an additional market for the South Dakota consumer. And so I think we've already had been advised by several companies that they will not do business or make loans available in South Dakota if this goes through. And I know you hear that threat all the time, but you should know that that is a fact, that there will be some companies failing to do business. And also remember, the premium tax is a stiffer tax than the bank franchise tax, because the bank franchise tax is a net tax. The premium tax is a gross tax, and it doesn't make any money or make any difference if you're going down the drain and not making a dime. You're still owe it. So if you want to make a level playing field, we'd love to have a net tax on our premiums, but we don't. And so, what's happened here, when the Division of Banking first got involved in this, it was strictly on a regulatory. They wanted more information. And during the process, now it's gotten down to a fight, this level playing field. And now it's a tax issue.
Additional questions from the committee? Additional questions? Seeing none, the chair closes public testimony on House Bill 1060, and we would entertain any other discussion and or action on the bill. Senator Gant.
I would move 1060 JA.
There's been a motion from Senator Gant to move Amendment 1060 JA. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Nelson. The motion is for the adoption of Amendment 1060 JA. Although, any discussion on that, Senator Gant? Senator Alston.
As I understand, that amendment then
removes the insurance companies, in other words, from this entire operation. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
That's right.
And I would resist the amendment, because I think, in my mind, there is a separate business operation on the part of the insurance companies, and I think it should be taxed in the same competitive manner.
Senator Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Over the summer, I heard about the SAFE Act and how it was a national thing coming down, and some mortgage brokers talked to me about that, and sounded like a good idea that we should do, but getting into this taxation, which I think there is a very serious concern there on how we are taxing this and whether or not it is double taxation, that we shouldn't get into that type of discussion on this type of bill, that we should be looking at it from a regulatory standpoint and not from a tax issue. And I think this amendment will help clarify that so that we can continue on the regulatory aspect.
Senator Merchant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Senator Adelstein in regards to, I know the differences in the premiums and having to make money to cover the premiums, but I think that if insurance companies are behaving as banks, they should fall under a similar taxation system.
Thank you, Senator Merchant. Any other comments? We have a motion and a second to amend with House Bill 1060-JA. I think that we're going to have a need for a roll call vote on this, because it's already, I'm feeling some separation here. So the secretary will call the roll. Anybody in favor of House Bill 1060-JA, indicate by saying aye. Opposed, say nay.
Adelstein?
Nay.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
No.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Trebekberry? Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
4 yes, 2 no.
The amendment passes for House Bill 1060. We'll now go on to further discussion and or action on House Bill 1060 as amended. Senator Nesloff.
I think that, was there some language we needed to add? Did everyone, I saw a lot of heads nodding when you mentioned that, so I don't know if we need to do that at this point or not since we passed the amendment.
I believe that Mr. Afdahl said that as far as the amendment 1060-JA, for them to be comfortable with it, we'd have to add non-mortgage on section subsection 6. Is that correct?
Non-residential.
Senator Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'd have a question for Mr. Gregerson or Ms. Rogers. Is that, either one of you, is that, will you still be comfortable with adding that language? You said non-residential in front of mortgage? Whichever one of you. Either one.
As
okay.
far as I know, I don't think we're concerned with, as far as the insurance company, with the residential portion. So I hate to make a commitment without calling, but I think it would be all right. And I will certainly check immediately and get back to you.
Is that an amendment to the amendment, Senator, or the amended bill, Senator Nesloff?
Yes.
It's been a motion by Senator Nesselhoff and seconded by Senator Adelstein to insert non-residential in front of mortgage on subsection 6 of the amended form of the bill. It's been a motion and a second to amend the bill as amended. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're once again amended, and we're back to discussion and or final action on House Bill 1060 as amended. Senator Nesloff.
Now that we have made this bill sufficiently pointless, I will move to pass.
It's been a motion by Senator Nesloff, seconded by Senator Merchant, do pass. Any other discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed, say nay. The clerk will call the roll.
Adelstein?
Aye.
Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Trebekberry? Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
House Bill 1060 as amended is hereby declared passed. We're going to go to House Bill 1268 at this time. Proponents for House Bill 1268, which is an act to revise certain provisions concerning the maximum number of alcoholic beverage retail licenses that may be held by any person, corporation, or business.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'll just skip my introductory remarks and turn it right over to Mr. Doherty.
Very well said. Proponents for House Bill 1268. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tim Doherty. I'm a registered lobbyist for the licensed beverage dealers of South Dakota. And I want to thank Senator Nesselhoff for sponsoring this bill. This bill deals with the limits on the number of on-sale liquor licenses that one person can own or have a financial interest in. Under current law, a person can have an interest in three liquor licenses plus an additional three liquor licenses if the additional three licenses are used in connection with a restaurant business. And the purpose of the limit on the ownership on liquor licenses is to prohibit a person from monopolizing or controlling all the licenses that a city or county can issue. Before July 1st of 2008, all cities and counties were subject to population quotas in issuing on-sale liquor licenses. And as some of you may recall, last session, the legislature passed a bill that was Senate Bill 126 that allowed cities and counties to issue on-sale liquor licenses for restaurants, full-service restaurants, that were outside the population quotas that are traditionally on liquor licenses. And so as a result of that, cities and counties can now issue as many on-sale liquor licenses for restaurants as they deem necessary for the community. And therefore, those licenses are not subject to the population quotas, and there's no risk or fear that one person cannot monopolize or control all those kinds of liquor licenses. So there's really no need to impose a population quota on those kinds of liquor licenses. And this, so this bill would essentially allow a city or county to issue what I meant to say is that this would allow a person to hold as many on-sale liquor licenses that are used in connection with a restaurant as that person needs to conduct business in the various communities where they're operating throughout the state of South Dakota. And the effect of this would then be that businesses like Applebee's or Chili's, other kinds of businesses, would be better able to expand throughout the state. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer those.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. Additional proponents for House Bill 1268? Any additional proponents for House Bill 1268? Seeing none, are there any opponents to House Bill 1268? Opponents? Seeing none, I don't think that you need a rebuttal with that. I would open for committee questions. Senator Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Doherty, with the Senate Bill 77 that is still going through the halls here, is any of that language affected in this language here where you're striking the three?
Mr. Chair. Senator Gant, no. The language in this bill only pertains to on-sale licenses. Senate Bill 77 only pertain to off-sale licenses. The restrictions are in the same statute, but we've amended different provisions of those statute, or that statute.
Additional questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Nelson.
And Mr. Doherty can just nod from there. I just want to emphasize this does not expand liquor licenses by a single license, does it not? No. That's all I wanted to say. Make sure that was clear.
Very well. Additional questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony on House Bill 1268 and open for committee discussion and or action. There's been a motion by Senator Nesselhoff, seconded by Senator Gant, do pass. Any other discussion on that motion? Seeing none, the secretary will call the roll. All those in favor of do pass motion of House Bill 1268 indicate by saying aye. All opposed, say nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Edelstein? Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Trebek, Berry, Nielsen?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Unanimous.
House Bill 1268 is hereby declared passed. There's been a motion from Senator Nesselhoff, seconded by Senator Nelson, to place House Bill 1268 on the consent calendar. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It'll be on the consent calendar. We'll stand at recess for just a moment while we're waiting for the proponents for House Bill 1265 to arrive.
Oh, Jackie, would you prepare that amendment? Thanks.
We'll now come back to order. Hearing testimony for House Bill 1265, an act to allow sellers to receive attorney's fees in actions involving the disclosure statement required for certain real estate transfers. Proponents for House Bill 1265. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senator Dan Ollers, District 25. House Bill 1265 makes a change to current statute that would allow the seller to also be able to recoup court costs if the seller was the prevailing party in a dispute between problems with regards to disclosure statements. Basically, how this works is when you're buying or selling a home, as a seller, you fill out a disclosure statement. As a buyer, you have the right to dispute anything upon the purchase of that home if you find that you believe that the seller has misrepresented any particular part of the home, damage to the roof, mold, so on and so forth. They may take the seller to court. What has happened and what has been brought to my attention is that the buyers are currently using this practice in some cases to renegotiate the price of a home. They will and use the threat of court fees to coerce the seller into reducing that price. sort of buyer's remorse, if you may say. This would put the seller, this bill would put the seller on an even playing field and allow, if the seller were to prevail in this court case, the judge would have the option of awarding court fees to be paid by the buyer. With that, I will stand by for any other questions that you may have and let other proponents speak on behalf of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Allers. Additional proponents for House Bill 1265.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Brian Gosch, Representative District 32. I'm speaking on behalf...
Senator.
Yes.
Sorry. Representative. Gave you a promotion by accident.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Yet.
Welcome.
The path of least resistance. I'll take it. I'll take it. Well, this bill made it on consent on the House side and flew through the House, and I think the reason is because it is a fairness issue. I've only done one case like this, but I've talked to other attorneys who've done cases like this, and what they've told me is that the current law allows buyers to use the attorney's fees portion as a bludgeon. Essentially allows them, in cases that may be only worth $5,000, where the true value of the claim then becomes an attorney's fees. And one of the examples shared with me was $100,000 worth of attorney's fees in a case regarding a $5,000 underlying claim. As mentioned by the previous proponent, buyers wishing to get a new roof or to back out of a deal or to get new windows, new siding, sometimes use this provision as a threat to get something more out of the deal after signing the purchase agreement and agreeing to a price. I think passing this law will help reduce some frivolous claims and will ensure that buyers who bring a claim have a solid claim based on the seller disclosure statement for either negligently or willfully being misleading on that seller disclosure statement. So I guess with that, I will stand by for questions.
Thank you, Representative Gosch. Any additional proponents? House Bill 1265. Any additional proponents, House Bill 1265? Are there any opponents, House Bill 1265? Seeing none, the chair will open for committee questions. Senator Nesloff?
I'd have one for Representative Gosch. I know, I lost my train of thought. Can you give us some... I mean, obviously, there was a reason why at some point we allowed this for the buyer, not the seller. Do you have any idea what that was, the history of? I'm looking to you as the lawyer in the room to maybe walk me through this a little bit as to justification for why this is in place.
In South Dakota, we don't keep verbatim transcripts of, you know, so determine legislative intent and things like that. I guess the short answer, I don't know. I could only guess. Although the seller disclosure statement is something that the law says it's not a warranty. Some courts have almost treated it as such. So it's gotten to the point where if the light bulb doesn't work, well, you didn't disclose that. You need to replace my light bulb. So with the threat of attorney's fees, sellers, I think, usually succumb to that and just give in. But I could only guess as to why it was originally that way. You know how some things can be, it might be a timeliness issue. Something got brought to the legislature. There may have been a set of bad facts. Someone got into a bad deal. I'm not sure.
Do we know when this was put into place? I'm sure we can find that out. I don't have it. I just didn't want to look it up.
Is there a, I mean, is that going to influence your vote, Senator? As the
43. Okay, you beat me to it. I was looking to look up the statute and look at the session.
Thanks, Jackie. 1993. Any additional questions from the committee? Seeing no additional questions from the committee, the chair closes public testimony on House Bill 1265 and will move for committee discussion and or action. Senator Gant has made a motion for due pass. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Merchant. There's a motion and a second. Any additional discussion? Seeing none, we will move for action on the bill. Those in favor of due pass motion for House Bill 1265 indicate by saying aye. All opposed say no. Secretary will call the roll.
Edelstein? Gant?
Aye.
Merchant?
Aye.
Nesselhoff?
Aye.
Derbeck Berry? Nelson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye. House Bill 1265 is hereby declared passed. There's been a motion by Senator Merchant, seconded by Senator Gant to place on the consent calendar. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It'll be on the consent calendar. That basically leaves us with House Bill 1219, and there's some confusion on whether or not the chair would defer that. We are going to defer action on House Bill 1219 until Thursday. I think Thursday is going to be a busy day for us, so at this time, if there's anyone that has any relevant discussion for interim studies, we could handle that right now. Otherwise, the chair has forms. You could certainly fill out and get to LRC. Seeing none, well, if you'd like to discuss it for the record, we certainly will oblige you that time today. Chair, entertain a motion to adjourn. Then a motion to adjourn. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Who made the motion?
Gant. Motion by Gant, seconded by Senator Nelson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We're adjourned.